Good evening and welcome to another edition of Bird Calls from the Knoll Foundation Studios here at Red River Radio. Tonight's program is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and we invite you to call in with your questions tonight about our feathered friends and the avian world at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Cliff Shackelford is our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio, and he's ready to answer your questions about birds tonight. Cliff is currently the statewide ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, a position he has held since 1997, and he's been an avid bird watcher for more than 30 years. He is also the first author of the book Hummingbirds of Texas, published in 2005 by Texas A&M Press, and he has authored more than 80 articles on birds and birding. He and his wife Julie and their two children live in East Texas, and Cliff, welcome back.
It's good to be here. Thank you, Bill.
You guys didn't get snapped by the hurricane too much.
No, it was projected, you know, maybe 48 hours before it made landfall, it was expected to kind of come up our stem of East Texas. But Laura wobbled farther east, and boy, did it impact you guys here in Louisiana.
Yeah.
And I'm just hearing in the last couple days about how where there's a lot of red-cockaded woodpeckers on the Coosatchie National Forest near Leesville, that maybe 50% of the cavity trees snapped or completely toppled over from, you know, 80 to 90 mile an hour winds, or maybe even more. I don't know. People can't even get in because with all the trees down, the back roads are all blocked, and, you know, walking through an area, a forested area that's had wind damage, it can take you about an hour to walk a football field length, 100 yards. It's just slow going. You need helicopter or drone or something to get in there and take pictures.
Well, Arkell, let's say Alexandria transmitter is back in Dry Prong in that area.
Yeah.
So we are literally running right now on diesel fuel, us and LPB, because we're on their tower down there. And, the diesel fuel ran out sometime last week, and we had to go in there and clear brush out and try to get back there, and it snapped off the power line. The transformer's laying on the ground, and there's trees all over the place. Fortunately, our dish is still up so it can receive our signal, and we're doing everything we can do to stay on the air down there.
Yeah.
But, it's been a miserable experience,
right.
But that's what Mother Nature does. It gives you a taste of power.
Yeah, and impacts on wildlife is one thing, but we certainly reach out to all the folks that were impacted, because that's pretty severe. And it really hit me with Hurricane Harvey, which was 3 years ago in Texas, when not 48 hours after the storm, I kept getting calls from reporters all over the country. They're not calling me. They're calling my agency. They want to talk about birds, what the hurricane did to birds. So the call gets channeled to me. And I had to tell people, I said, look, man, we can't give you anything this soon. We've got staff that can't even get to their homes. You know, some of these places had over 50 inches of rain. They can't even see if their house and their kids and family are okay. We certainly aren't going to know what the impacts are to wildlife. And, you know, I think the best thing for a lot, what I've noticed with hurricanes is, you know, birds do pretty well. They can avoid areas. It even sucks in pelagic birds of the out in the Gulf, brings them inland. It doesn't cause this mass casualty like we'd think. It just causes great disruption. So.
Well, and also many parts of nature are attuned to the environment that, and they get up and flee.
It is.
You know.
And it impacts habitat. So when birds come back after a hurricane, the beach may have moved, the marsh may have changed, but change is what we're always expecting out there. And so
the only constant in the universe is change.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Yes, I have a family member who lives down in Houston and was in the middle of that. She was on an island all by herself. Her home did not get flooded, but the neighbors did. And the Cajun Navy came in and did a lot of rescue down there. And, of course, the Cajun Navy got impacted by Hurricane Laura. So they are now, you know, officially the impactees, as opposed to, although they there, you know, the Cajun Navy, they know how to get out of there too and boat right. their way out. And I've got friends down in Lake Charles that lost a home, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. You are listening to Bird Calls tonight from Red River Radio, and Cliff Shackelford is our resident ornithologist, and we are talking about birds and birding tonight. And we invite you to give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502, and call in with your questions and also any concerns that you have about what's going on out there. And Cliff, at the end of last month's show and at the end of every month's show, we give a conservation tip. Would you mind reminding us what last month's conservation tip was?
Yeah, we talked about learning more about your neighbors, reading up on nature that surrounds you. You've got a lot of interesting neighbors around you, especially your feathered friends, that there's so much literature out there that if you're looking for a topic, there are so many really cool things to read about. And I mentioned how even subscribing to your state's Game and Fish magazine is something for the whole family, with you know, lots of cool pictures and articles about wildlife. It's good to have in the house. And of all the books I mentioned, I mentioned my three top picks. I'm going to put in a plug for that first one again. And it's for this listening area, really anywhere in the southeast U.S. It's a book called Land of Bears and Honey by Joe Truitt and Dan Lay. It's University of Texas Press. It's one of my all-time favorites. I can pick that book up every 5 or 6 years, read it again, and pull something new out of it that I didn't really see the first time or didn't have much experience with the first time. So it's a really good read for people in the listening area. Again, Land of Bears and Honey by Joe Truitt and Dan Lay.
All right. And at the beginning of each show, we do a profile species. And what do you have for us this month?
Yeah, we're profiling our 60th species tonight, which I'm pretty proud of. And this evening we're going to profile a species that's a surprise that we'll listen to first and then identify and discuss after we hear this one recording.
A loud bird.
Noisy. That's a couple birds in there. What you just heard were the squawks and squeals of the red-crowned parrot, a species found in northeast Mexico and the lower Rio Grande Valley of Texas, or simply known as the Valley. And by northeast Mexico, what I mean is that lower Atlantic slope and proceeding down more into central Mexico of the following states: Hidalgo, Nuevo León, Puebla, San Luis Potosí, Tamaulipas, and Veracruz. Most of the old literature agrees that the only native member of the parrot family in the U.S. was the Carolina parakeet, which occurred mostly here in the southeastern U.S., yet is extinct today. Others believe that red crowns may have had a contiguous range starting in the valley and extending south throughout the rest of its range through Veracruz. The origin of the red-crowned parrot in South Texas is a hot debate among ornithologists, bird watchers, and conservationists. There are several old newspaper articles, including in 1885 in the Laredo Times and the Galveston Daily News, mentioning the occasional flocks of parrots seen in South Texas, but unfortunately none identified the birds to species. The southern tip of Texas may have been part of the Red Crown's original range prior to widespread habitat loss for agriculture. The current northern limit of this bird in Mexico is roughly 200 miles south of Brownsville, Texas, which is nothing for a strong flyer such as this parrot. So it shouldn't be too surprising that some of those birds mentioned in the newspapers could have been Red Crowns back in the 1880s. Certainly some of the Red Crowns flying around today are escape pets, but one cannot rule out wild strays from the Mexican population. Thus, today there's likely a blend of wild and escape parrots in the valley. There are also large populations of this parrot consisting solely of escapees and their descendants in several big cities in Florida and California. But none of those has an easy overland connecting route to Mexico like the birds found in South Texas. This species is short, stocky, and overall smaller than a crow. Much of the bird is a bright leafy green with a red forehead and crown, and red patches in the wings seen during flight. Another name for this species, especially in avicultural circles, is the red-crowned Amazon, Mexican redhead parrot, and green-cheeked Amazon. This parrot has a highly omnivorous diet. They nest in cavities, especially old woodpecker holes found in dead palm trees. With safety in numbers, they roost communally in large groups by gathering into a couple of neighboring trees. Bird watching can bring tourism dollars, and this parrot is one of the top attractions for bird watchers in the valley. In fact, some cities realize the economic impact from bird watching, and the following four cities have enacted ordinances to protect this parrot from harassment, harm, or capture: Brownsville, Harlingen, McAllen, and Weslaco. Moreover, this species is the official bird for the city of Brownsville. If you want to see an amazing spectacle, I highly recommend visiting Olivera Park in Brownsville, Texas, on any late afternoon right before dusk during the winter months. Wait until dark before departing. The roost there is year-round, but thinly populated during the warmer months when birds are paired up, raising young, and roosting as a small family group elsewhere. Olivera Park has a large communal roost consisting of several species of parrots, many of which are escapees, but the red-crowned is the dominant species in the roost, often consisting of 200 individuals or more. This park has soccer fields, baseball fields, tennis courts, and a skateboard park, and is bustling with people getting some exercise every evening. At the same time, flying all around overhead are dozens and dozens of noisy parrots getting ready to go to sleep for the night in some of the park's trees. The people ignore the parrots while the parrots ignore the people, and watching this lack of interaction between the two is as interesting as observing all the parrots in one spot. To see a photo of a red-crowned parrot snapped by our very own James Childress, please visit the Bird Calls page at redriverradio.org.
And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And you can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Deanne and Ken, you're both online and on hold. Please hang on for a second because I want to get to these two photos of pileated woodpeckers, because we've had a discussion about ivory-billed and pileated over the last month. And we've got two photos. One is of a bird that's up on top of a transformer. It's not very obvious there. However, the other one is a very nice picture of a bird roosting up on a dead branch. And you had spoken with both of these people by email about what the difference is. And we've got a video up on our page as well that explains the difference of the pileated and the ivory-billed woodpecker.
Yeah, so why don't you first tell people how they can see all this stuff?
You can go to redriverradio.org and scroll down. You'll see the page for bird calls this month, and click on that and open it up. You're going to see not only the parrot that we just spoke about, the red-crowned parrot, but all of the photos that have been submitted for this month, plus some videos in there as well. So just scroll down there, and there's also a guide for distinguishing a variety of different birds, including the pileated and the ivory-billed woodpecker.
Yep, so that's a hot topic, and that was one of the photos submitted. A listener in Florida,
Loxahatchee,
she thought she had an ivory build. She said, I'm not interested in any reward. I just want to know if this is an ivory build. She took a decent picture, and you can see it. And it's clearly of a pileated. And the other picture that was sent was by someone saying that this woodpecker was on the transformer and making a lot of noise, banging on it.
Ray Finger.
And that's a pileated as well. They'll use metal roofs and metal gutters, and in this case, a metal transformer to drum on to get their voice heard farther. And it's not really voice, the drum is used for territorial behavior to basically say, hey, I live here, this is my place, you other guys, pileateds, keep out. So they find that these metal things that call, that drumming rather, carries a lot farther. And so that's what Ray Finger experienced on the transformer. So the other person that submitted. We sent her some stuff that Bill has put on the website to help her distinguish the pileated from the ivory-billed, because we probably get this call, I'd say, several times a year. Mm-hmm. We've been on the air 7 years, and I bet we've gotten it two or three times a year. Someone calls saying, I think I have an ivory-billed. But what Bill's done is he's embedded two really good, useful things on that site. One is a poster card that was done back in about 2005, artwork by David Sibley that shows how to tell the pileated from the ivory bill. They also threw in redhead woodpecker and wood duck. But then we have a video that my agency did, about 2007. And I'm briefly in it. What's neat is you can tell it's old because, man, I've got black hair back then. And, you know, what's black then is now gray or white on my top of my head and on my goatee. And check that video out. It's about a 12-minute video. And
we've got a little bit of audio from that.
Yep. And we talk about a project that was done in about 2007 in Texas looking for that bird. So, yeah, there's a lot of neat stuff that Bill's put on regarding pileated versus ivory-billed. And then moving down, someone sent in a funny-looking picture of a bird just spread, tail, wings open, just sitting on the handrail of a patio and wondering what it is. It's a view from behind of a great crested flycatcher that's sunning. And a lot of birds will do this to try to get rid of ectoparasites for feather health. And so sunning is not unusual in birds, but it's really neat that this person caught a great crested doing the sunning on their handrail of their patio. And then going down, let's see, what else do we have here, Bill? There's been a lot of submissions. Oh, Mississippi kite. A listener sent in a photo of a Mississippi kite perch, which is always neat because, I don't know, 99% of the time I see them, they're aloft. They're flying around, so you don't see them perched all that often, so it's always a treat. And then let's see. There's some more pictures.
I got to get there. Yeah, yeah. I just was doing something. Yeah, this is the one, the summer tanager.
Yep, the summer tanager in the backyard. And then the last one is a video of a black vulture taking flight. So
yeah, and they thought that summer tanager was a pine warbler.
Yeah, it looks very, the color's the same, but boy, when you look at that heavy honker bill, that's no warbler bill. That's definitely a tanager bill. So.
Now, is that an insect-eating bill, or is that a seed cracking?
They are omnivorous, so Okay. They eat a lot of fruit, seeds, insects. They eat it all.
It's a heavy-duty bill.
Yeah.
All right, we've got calls already lined up, and you are welcome to call in right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Ken from Nacogdoches, please stay with us. We've got Deanne from Shreveport next. Deanne, what's your call tonight?
Well, I have a lot of big trees around my house, and for a while, it was very upsetting. It seemed like every few days we would find a little dead bird in the backyard. Actually, we even found one in the front yard at one time. And I think they were sparrows or finches. I'm not sure. They were small, but I'm kind of squeamish about all this. So I would go to the neighbor and say, would you help me get this bird? And, anyway. So one day I was having coffee with a friend in my backyard, and I heard this thud behind her, and I looked, and it was a little bird. Oh, it was just so upsetting. So we both looked up in the tree, and there were three hawks up there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought, well, why? All of a sudden, I've lived here 2 years, and I used to hear the birds tweeting all the time, and I loved it. Now it's just silent, and I'm finding these birds. Well, someone told us that they said, do you have a bird feeder in your backyard? And someone actually had given me a bird feeder, and they said, well, if you get rid of the bird feeder, that'll stop.
Hmm.
So we did. We got rid of the bird feeder, and lo and behold, it's true. It stopped.
Yeah.
But my question is, I have a little hummingbird feeder, and I would love to put it on the hook where the other bird feeder used to be, but I don't want to start this problem again and certainly right. not to hummingbirds. So would it be okay to put the hummingbird feeder out there?
Yeah, I would definitely do it. Hawks are not big predators of hummingbirds simply because of the size ratio. It would be like you trying to get a full meal out of a Cheeto. And so a raptor is going to go spend a lot of energy on something more filling than a hummingbird. They're not going to be easy to catch. So I don't think you have to worry about that. What I'm worried about is maybe the feeder, the seed feeder and now the hummingbird feeder, keep them pretty far from the window. And what I mean by that is probably no closer than 20 feet because the hawk is going to, of course, see all the activity of feeder, and if they get spooked, a bird might fly into the window and die that way. But if your hawk is going to kill birds, you're not going to probably find much except a pile of feathers. You don't find a dead bird in great shape if a hawk did it. You're going to find a pile of feathers and not much else because he's not doing it for pleasure. He's doing it for lunch. And so he's going to eat as much as he can and leave you just a pile of feathers where, you know, someone like me comes up on that scene and I'm looking for distinctive feathers like a wing feather and a tail feather to help me identify it because there's usually not feet or skull or bill or anything hard for you to identify the bird with, so you got to go with feathers. But I think also another problem with some feeders, if it's not the window that's too close, sometimes we get feed that is tainted and it's bad. It's got maybe aflatoxin, and that's a big killer of birds in high doses. So I would do a couple things. I'd make sure the feeder is far enough away from the window, and if you see birds that are dead and not eaten by hawks, I'd get rid of the seed that I have in storage, bury it, get rid of it, and start over, find a new bag, maybe even from a different seller, different source, to make sure you're getting seed that's not tainted. But just finding dead birds on the ground in good shape, that to me is not a hawk. They're not there to be malicious.
Go ahead.
Someone had suggested that maybe it was juvenile hawks learning how to go after prey, but...
And that's where the window's the problem. And so as the bird flees, it goes away from the hawk, and maybe on the other side of the direction it's going, rather, is your window. So that's where windows are bad news. There are a lot of data out there that windows, we can quantify window deaths pretty well. They're one of the bigger killers of birds. Our home windows, our office windows, they are just deadly. And it's because if you stand outside in the day and look at your window and don't look through the window at all the stuff in your house, look at the glass and see that reflection of the sky and the trees and the blue sky and the white clouds. To a bird, that looks just like a breezeway. Let's just fly on through it. So glass is a deadly killer to birds. You don't want to keep your feeder too close or you're going to have a problem like what you're saying. So I don't think your hawks are your problem. I think that they might be sitting there curious and maybe swooping down, but dead birds that haven't been eaten are probably from tainted seed and or your windows.
Oh, I got you. Okay, one other quick question. Someone once told me that if you fill one of those hummingbird feeders, if you forget to fill it, the hummingbirds will starve. Is that true?
No. We don't have that much power. That's someone who thinks they've got a lot of power over wildlife. And you know what? These hummingbirds have been in the U.S. a lot longer than Anglos that have settled this area. So that is not an issue.
Now, how about letting it set too long and it could ferment?
That's a big problem. If you don't have a lot of birds drinking it dry, then after 3-4 days in this southern heat, it can get very thick and viscous and kind of like I liken it to curdled milk. So what we recommend is in the spring and summer, to just don't fill it up all the way and replace it every 2 or 3 days. And then when September comes at our latitude, And in our area, where you are and where I am, we're going to get flooded with ruby-throated hummingbirds that are headed south. And all of a sudden, we're going to go from maybe a couple sightings a day to a dozen or more birds. And that's when you want to fill your feeder up. And you won't have to dump out old feed if you're like my yard. You're having to, you know, replace it at lunchtime because they've drained it in the morning hours. And so what we recommend is maybe put up multiple feeders if you can't get out there and fill the feeder that often. Is put up, run two or three feeders during September at our latitude. And that would be same thing I'd recommend for people in the Rocky Mountains that are listening. And that would be in late July through August. Those are their peak months for all those Rocky Mountain hummingbirds like broad-tailed and rufous and calliopes and on and on. They're peaking a lot earlier than our ruby throats, but the thing to do as a homeowner is the same, is to maintain the feeders and to keep them clean so that you won't starve the hummingbirds. They're going to move on and find other food. That is we don't have that kind of voodoo magic on birds at all. So yeah.
Okay. I appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks. Those were good questions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Deanne. And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. You can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Elizabeth from Jefferson, Texas, please hold on the line. We've got Ken from Nacogdoches up next. Ken, what's your question for Cliff?
Well, it's not so much a question, but just an observation, which surprised me. I spent some time in Colorado this summer, and we have a seed feeder with black oil sunflower seeds out in the back area near the wood line. And I looked out there one day, early August, and sitting on top of the seed feeder was a peregrine falcon.
Oh, wow.
And I thought he must be the world's laziest peregrine falcon.
Yeah.
I could see him diving at 120 miles an hour to get a hapless dove or something. But instead, he was just harassing Steller's jays. We had a big family of Steller's jays. And he would just fly after them into the woods, and he never was successful. And he stayed around for about an hour, and he got to where he would stay on a log nearby, and when the jays and other small birds would come up, he would attack them and harass them, go flying off out into the woods. And
then
about a week later, he came back and did the same thing.
Oh, that's cool.
So I never heard of a falcon like that hunting around a seed feeder. I thought he might be a juvenile and just didn't know how to hunt.
Yeah,
I didn't know what to think.
That's neat. I would love to have that kind of a close view of a peregrine. That's a treat. So that's pretty neat, Ken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we're talking about bird strikes. We had an uncommonly high number of bird strikes this year. One was a flicker, a beautiful flicker, a robin, a couple of hummingbirds, and a junco. And usually I try to revive them, but these apparently had been going too fast, so there's no hope for them.
Yeah, and there are a whole bunch of YouTube videos on DIY, do-it-yourself remedies for big windows that would cost just pennies. Because if that concerns you, and it should, if you've got that many birds hitting your window, you got a problem. And the best way to do it is go on YouTube, look at these DIY methods for deterring birds. It's basically taking big windows and putting a grid on it. And so you can use ripcord. I saw one that uses ripcord, and it doesn't look bad. So it breaks up the pattern of the big window. Mm. And so you'll still be able to stand at the window and look out in Colorado and see, you know, the big mountains that still have snow on top. But for the birds, they're going to have that grid over it that will help them see that, hey, that's not normal. I'm not going to fly into that. So I highly encourage listeners to do that. If you've got a repeated window with repeated window kills, please do something about it. Because just think, if thousands of people, and it's actually in the hundreds of thousands of people, are experiencing that all over the country, all over the world, that adds up after decades of us living in our homes. It adds up, and we are seeing the declines of it, and it makes a difference. So please fix your windows. You don't have to spend a lot of money. I'm not telling you to pay, you know, put a car, big plywood over it like a hurricane's coming. That's not what I'm talking about. And you will still enjoy your window without having the window kills. And so please do that. And thanks for the call, Ken.
Now, I'm curious. In audio, we have what we called angled windows. So on this studio, those windows are actually angled like this, just ever so slightly, a few degrees. Now, that reflects the sound down toward the floor rather than having it slap right back into the studio. Light is the same as sound, I mean, as far as the way it reflects. You know, for future ideology on this, wouldn't that be a possible solution to angle a window down?
It is, and I wish architects would start building especially reflective windowed office buildings that way. There are bird blinds where they have been built that way. They're, the one that I'm most familiar with is out at Davis Mountain State Park out in Fort Davis, Texas. And they built a structure where bird watchers, probably 10 or 15 bird watchers, could get inside and look out a window at water source, feeders, etc. And they built it right. They did exactly what you're talking about. The glass is angled just ever so slightly down. So
couple
that
of
means,
degrees.
That means the top of the glass is pointing down more than the bottom. And so it is, when you go outside and see that, it's reflecting the gravel and the ground and the water. Right. And so birds aren't going to fly through that. So it absolutely is the fix. We just, the bird community would love to get architects of the world to do that, make bird-friendly windows. There needs to be a revolution, because that would be an easy fix. And I'm standing with you, Bill, at this glass, and you and I don't notice a darn difference looking out of it.
No, a couple of degrees, but it's just enough. And that is standard practice in studio building, where you have reflections of sound instead of light. And it makes a world of difference. It breaks up the sound pattern and actually adds to what we call reverberation, makes it a little sweeter sounding.
Well, I haven't thought about this. So what if you live near a busy roadway? Would that make the road noise less obvious inside the house if it was hitting such glass?
It would reflect that noise down toward the ground. Now, what comes through the glass, now this is double paned, so you have an air pocket in between the two, and the one in here is facing inward down as well. That's also an insulation effect.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are a lot of windows that are made with double panes these days for better insulation, and that would be so easy just to, literally, it's only a degree or two. I mean, 4 degrees, I think, is the most, and it doesn't take that much.
That would be a win-win then. If you lose that sound that you don't want to hear of traffic or barking dogs next door, if that would help, and avoid window strikes by birds, my goodness. Some architect should start designing that and selling it as bird-friendly design. I think would have, you know, some business. I would call that person up for sure.
Absolutely.
Yep.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we do this once a month with Cliff, and also next week we will have What's Bugging You at this time. And these are shows that we've been running on this air for quite a few years. And we had a caller calling up, obviously a new listener in the area, wanting to know where the news was. Well, this is something we've been doing with you for 5 years, I believe it is.
Seven years. You've been here every bit of that 7 years.
I'm getting old, Cliff. You know, time is flying here. So, all right, we go next to Elizabeth from Jefferson, Texas. Elizabeth, you're on with Cliff. And what's your question tonight? Go ahead.
About a week ago, I was watching my bird feeder out the window, and a bird that looked to be about a little bit larger than a mature cardinal flew down, and just it barely lit on the feeder, and then it left, flew off. It was just like a split second, but it was bright orange with a black head.
Okay.
Could that have been a Baltimore Oriole?
Yes, indeed, and that's what I was going to say. A bright orange bird with a black head is a male Baltimore Oriole, And they really pour through East Texas and Western Louisiana this time of the year as fall migrants. So did you say you saw it recently? I don't remember what you said.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was about a week ago.
Yeah. And so Baltimore Orioles are passing through. And so people that know that and love Orioles, they'll put out grape jelly for the Baltimore Orioles. They love to eat grape jelly. And of course, everything else does too, especially flies.
Insects, ants.
Yeah, ants, wasps, bees. But it's pretty cool to see an Oriole feeder that's full of grape jelly. You can just get the cheap generic brand, put a little dab out there, and see what you get. But I know that farther north, where people have them as a backyard breeding bird, you're going to have a better luck at it. So someone listening in, say, Minneapolis is going to have a lot of an easier time than we are. But if you're lucky, you'll get another one, Elizabeth, passing through your area, and that would sure like to gobble down some grape jelly. So,
okay. So yeah. if I were to put it out now, it wouldn't be too late.
They're still pouring through. I saw one yesterday in Nacogdoches, so they're going to be pouring through for the next couple 3 weeks or more. So I would do it, and you know, if all you've got is strawberry jelly, go for it. But jelly without the chunks, so that means jelly, not preserves. You know, they don't want the chunks. It's a little difficult, but you can't beat grape jelly, a generic brand. It's cheap, and if they don't eat it, then hey, you got something for breakfast on your toast.
I'll be over.
I have another question.
Okay.
Last year, about between middle of October until the middle of November, my cardinals, which I have plenty of year round, they just seem to have disappeared. Mm-hmm. What else? What do you think they were eating on or feeding on that made them not? I didn't understand that. Why they didn't come?
Yeah, they probably did find a food source that was to their liking. You know, that's when there's a lot of seeds available. Things like beautyberry can be rewarding. So maybe they found a patch or knew of a patch a couple doors down or half a mile away, and so. Birds are going to move when food promotes that. So that's probably what happened. I'm guessing they came back after a little while, right?
Oh, yes. Yes, they came back around the middle of November.
Right. So, yes. You know, if you live next door to me and my wife, we've got so much berry-giving stuff that I bet lots of cardinals. And we've seen this in the winter. We counted last winter, we had one. Our rusty black haw had, I want to say, 11 or 12 cardinals sitting in it at once. And there was just so much food that we had available in our wildscape. So maybe you've got a neighbor that's cool like me and has a wildscape. And that means landscaping for wildlife. That means planting native plants that are giving back to nature. They're not just green and looking good. They actually have a purpose. They're providing pollen for pollinators, or providing berries like we just mentioned. So this is a plug for you, Elizabeth, and others to start with some little small corner in your yard and put some native plants back there that are wildscape plants that give back to wildlife, and you will see the benefits. And after 4 or 5 years of growing your wildscape, you're going to be amazed at what you have. And you won't care when theaters go down and movies aren't shown anymore, because you're going to have quite a show right there in your backyard with your wildscape.
Oh, yeah. These are quite the entertainment for me.
Cool.
And I wanted to say, as far as birds not flying into windows, what I do on my windows is I put two or three of those little window clings that you can get at the dollar store, you know, and they just peel right off when you want to take them off.
Yep.
But I haven't had birds fly into my windows yet, and
good.
My feeder is not 20 feet from here. So.
Uh-huh. Well, good.
Anyway, I enjoy your show so much.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
And thank you. And you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. And we have all lines open right now, so you'll get right in. Give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Well, as you had mentioned, Cliff, migratory season is upon us. So if I'm going to go out and look for migrating birds, what would be the thing that I should look for at this time of year, and what can we expect coming up?
Yeah, you can't beat a wetland. So a pond, especially one that it has some drying edge to it where it's created some mud flats. You've got opportunity to see shorebirds on the edge in that mud. The water, depending on the deepness, you can see different wading birds, things like herons and egrets and ibis and so forth. I think that's a lot of fun about fall. Wood storks start showing up in the mid-summer time and usually stick around with us until early October, mid-October. And that's another really neat one that if you've got a wetland, you can see a wood stork. And this is a monster bird. You think a great blue heron is big. Well, look at a wood stork standing next to him. He is a big, giant bird. So I think wetlands are really good, that you can see some early ducks coming through, like blue-winged teal. They're coming through right now in September. Of course, the big push of waterfowl is going to be several weeks after that, when all the wintering birds start coming down. But yeah, fall migration, it's not the mad rush of spring migration. Things are leisurely going back, but you can see a lot of neat stuff. I mean, there's a lot of warblers that are pushing through. It's one of the, really good time to see black-throated green warblers in our area, Nashville warblers in the fall. So I think it's fun to get out in fall and look to see what's coming to your area.
Now I'm going to have to get my camera out. Now, wood storks, I presume those deliver trees and not babies?
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
They don't bring babies, yeah.
All right, bad jokes abound here at Red River Radio. Give us a call, 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And I'm waiting for Wally to get in. Ruby-throated hummingbirds, those are coming right now?
Yeah, September is the time for our latitude. So I'm talking about Texas, Louisiana. Those are just some of the primo places, and even states to the east of us. All those birds that bred in southern Canada and the Great Lakes states, they're heading out of there. And especially with what's going on right now with this big continental cold front, that's really changing temperatures dramatically. That's going to be a trigger for a lot of birds to leave. Not everything leaves, but a lot of stuff that needs to go usually beats the front or goes, because things start changing when water freezes and food's not available and flies aren't flying and you're a fly catcher. You got to get out of there. So, and ruby throats are one that we get every year in September. I start noticing it knack starting about the middle of the month. Well, actually, already in the early part of September, you see a trickle, but it really peaks in the second half of September and continues into October, but numbers trail off. But yeah, that last 2 weeks of September, it is just fantastic for looking at ruby-throated hummingbirds.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have lines open right now. Just one caller ahead of you, and Sandra from Pineville. You're on with Cliff. What's your question?
Yes, good evening. I just wanted to say that, over the years, I have always enjoyed birds, but since I'm living in a wooded area in Pineville, and I've put out several bird feeders with nuts and berries and the black oil sunflower seeds, I didn't know that there were so many different kinds of birds here.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
That's just amazing.
That's cool. And, Sandra, we've noticed that around the country with the pandemic, that's one thing that bird organizations and other bird people like me have noticed, that if there is a silver lining, it's a lot of people are teleworking and they're looking out their window more than before. They're not sitting in traffic getting to the office, and they're noticing exactly what you said, that there's a lot of neat stuff in their backyard. And then they start poking around on the internet, they find that there's apps that you can put on your phone to help you identify birds, and like Merlin, that's a really good app that can help the beginner. But you're doing it right. You're putting out feeders and you're enjoying them. What we always recommend with feeders is keep them clean. And so in between filling them up, whatever it is, seed feeder or hummingbird feeder, make sure it's clean and you don't use any harsh chemicals to do the cleaning. Just a little, just even hot water is good enough if it's not really caked on with mold and mildew. But keep things clean just like you would serve your pets. And I don't want to make that correlation. These birds are not pets. These are wild birds. All I'm saying is treat them with the respect you would when feeding grandkids or pets, that you would not use dirty food and dirty bowls. So we want to do that, and I'm sure you're doing that. And so, Sandra, what are some of the birds you're seeing there in Pineville at your feeders?
Black cat, chickadees, purple finches, tufted titmice, of course, cardinals, blue jays, and red belly woodpeckers.
Cool.
Now I see affiliated woodpeckers, but they don't come down to the feeders.
Right.
One thing I did see one day that was quite fascinating was a pair of red-bellied woodpeckers, a male and a female, that were on the rail of the deck, and the male was going up to the feeder and getting some feed for himself, and then he was putting something, because it's nuts and berries, and he had something, he'd bring it down to the rail, and the female would take it from his mouth.
Huh. Well, I would bet that he was feeding a youngster that was out of the nest and still dependent. And so that's typically what happens with woodpeckers. They don't do a lot of the social feeding like you'll see on the beach, like with royal terns. In the breeding season, the male will bring a fish to a female and feed it to her, and that's an indication that, hey, look, I'm a good hunter. I'm going to be good at feeding our babies if you'll let me have some with you. But I bet what you saw was a daddy feeding a baby. And then,
well, it wasn't a baby. They were both about the same size.
Yeah, that's right. And when a red-bellied leaves the nest, they're as big as they're going to get. They're not like human babies that when they come out for the first time at a few months old, that they're tiny, tiny. When birds leave the nest, those birds that are precocial, like the red-bellied woodpecker, they leave the nest, they are about as big as they're ever going to get. Okay, the exception is the tail might not be long enough, but overall, that baby's going to be no longer a baby. It's an immature bird. It's the size of mom and dad. So, and let's go back to the first two birds you listed. I'm going to tell you that here in the South, you're in Pineville, you're in the South, we do not have black-capped chickadees. That species does not occur south of, say, St. Louis, Missouri. So we have the southern chickadee. It's called the Carolina chickadee.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So, and then the other bird you mentioned, the purple finch, we don't get those until dead of winter. And so that purpley-looking finch that we have right now is the house finch. So change your notes that you've got your first two birds you listed, no longer black-capped chickadee and purple finch. They are now Carolina chickadee and house finch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Cool.
It's really hard to identify them when you look online sometimes.
It is really tough. So, yeah, you're doing a great job, and it's neat that you got to see all those things, especially a woodpecker feeding young. I think that's great. So thanks for the call, Sandra. Appreciate it.
I have one more question regarding my hummingbird feeder.
Okay.
And I don't have a place to hang it from the deck or anything. I have it hanging from a tree. But I have a problem with these big 1/2-inch ants coming down and getting into it.
Yeah, are they big black ants?
Yes.
Yeah, those are.
They get into it and they drown in it.
Yeah, they're carpenter ants, and they probably have a nest deep inside that tree. I would pick a different tree, and maybe it won't have the carpenter ant nest in there. And your pileated that you mentioned earlier. Yeah. They would love to know the location of that carpenter ant nest, because there are all these juicy larval stage carpenter ants that pileated woodpeckers love to eat. That's one of their favorite foods.
So put a big sign up.
Yeah. Yeah. Put a neon sign, direct the woodpecker to that tree. Yeah. Maybe he'll find it.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Great. Thanks for the call, Sandra.
Bye-bye.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. All lines are open right now, but we are getting close to the end of the show. But go ahead and try to give a call right now. And we've got some audio from A Pulse of the Planet that we had added to our segment here. And this is audio from a Pulse of the Planet that we had. This is in Brazil. Let's take a listen here. Now, for those of you who don't know, Pulse of the Planet is a module that we air every morning in the 8:30 slot, and it's beautiful. It's a scientific and a natural kind of thing. What were we hearing there? It's a cacophony of birds.
Yeah, and this aired, what, about 2 months ago?
Oh, yeah, about actually 3 weeks ago.
Oh, three
yeah.
weeks ago, okay. And so he talks about how he's on a farm in Brazil in the Pantanal.
Mm-hmm.
And so the good thing is, the interesting thing is, when I heard that, I recognized a couple of the species. But what's even better is I've got to phone a friend. I can use a lifeline. And I contacted a buddy of mine, Brett Whitney. He's one of the founders of Field Guides International, a birdwatching company. He leads most of his tours in Brazil. He's also a research associate of the Museum of Natural Science at LSU Baton Rouge, so he helped me out. And so let's listen to that first clip,
all right,
and we'll talk about the more notable ones. Southern Screamer is calling there. And all that chit-chat in the that you hear, because remember, these birds are singing at the same time, so right, they're overlapping each other. There were great Kiskadees, which is a bird we've profiled on the show, which is a bird that we share in common with Brazil. So pretty neat.
Yeah. And we do have another caller online. I don't have time to get your name yet because we got to get you on. What's your question for Cliff? You're on with Cliff.
Hello? I just wanted to tell the end of the story. I called, I guess, last year about all the cedar waxwings that landed in my red oak tree in the front yard.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't understand why. Well, back in February, I found out the reason why.
Okay.
I woke up one morning, get the coffee, looking out the back window, and there's not 56 birds, but like hundreds of these mm-hmm. cedar waxwings in this tree.
Mm-hmm.
So I went out and got some pictures, but the whole time I was out there, I was listening, and they were eating something in the tree.
Yeah.
And the empty holes were falling down on the aluminum patio cover that my neighbor had back there. It was a heck of a noise, but there must have been hundreds of those birds.
Yeah.
I got quite a few pictures. I didn't send them in.
Oh, please do.
I'll try and get them on before your next show. When is your next show?
That will be October
13th.
October 13th. He's got it memorized.
And that's not a Friday. It's not Friday the 13th, so we're good, right?
Yeah, so you can send them in. There'll be no bad luck.
Yeah. So remind us your name and where you're calling from, sir.
It's George.
Oh, George, where are you?
I finally got it.
Okay. Where are you calling from, George?
Bossier City.
Okay.
I don't know if I've sent you the picture yet of the woodpecker on the satellite dish.
Oh, well,
yeah, we'd love to see
that. That sounds just like the one we talked about earlier, about the one on the electric transformer on mm-hmm. the top of a telephone pole or electric pole. Again, yeah, probably using that to hammer on, to drum on. So, but yeah, the cedar waxwings, they will come in and strip a berry bush or berry tree in a matter of minutes or hours, and they'll mix in with robins, American robins, and so some of the favorites are American holly, black cherry. Those are two really good ones. They'll get into hackberry, sugarberry. These are natives that deciduous holly is another one. So I bet you what you had is one of those species that has berries, and you witnessed that short event where they strip it clean and then move on.
I'll try and figure out what the tree is, and I'll try and get some pictures to you before the next show.
Okay, very good, George. Thank you.
And we have to get to our conservation moment. You've got a little bit longer one this month, so we're going to give you a little more time. What have you got for us this month, Cliff?
Yeah. The title is Parrots as Pets Are Not for Everyone. Have you ever watched those amazing videos of talking parrots doing tricks and thought, hey, I'd sure love to own a parrot? Well, before you do, think twice and do some serious homework first. It's illegal to bring wild-caught species into the U.S., including parrots. Many species of macaw, cockatoo, and larger parrots are declining in the wild, in part due to the illegal pet trade. As nestlings, these birds are stolen from their nest and sent to local markets or to other countries to sell, but the journey is often deadly. Only a fraction survives the trip. Most nest robbers plan for such deaths by capturing four or five times as many birds as make it to market. Larger parrots, cockatoos, and macaws require a lot of attention. Without it, they can have serious behavioral issues. When young ones reach sexual maturity, they can become aggressive and bite. These birds are long-lived, attaining ages of 60 years or more. So depending on your age, such pets could outlive you. They can get very attached to a specific owner, so when passed down to your kids or rehomed, parrots may not form another bond with a new owner. If you must own a cockatoo, macaw, or parrot, find a responsible breeder to ensure that it's captive bred and not wild caught. The illegal pet trade of parrots must stop, as several species are facing extinction. If you're ready for a new pet, adopt a sweet dog or cat at your local animal shelter. Do it for the birds.
And there are plenty of pet rescue animals there, so that's a great way to remove a the need for euthanasia of these pets as well. You have been listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist Cliff Shackelford. And Cliff, I want to thank you again for joining us this month.
Great. Thank you, Bill.
It's always fun. And again, to remind you, if you'd like to send us a photo, my email is on our website. It is wbeckett, that's WBECKETT, at lsus.edu. That's wbeckett at lsus.edu. We love to get photographs in. We use these online, and also lots of parents and their kids and grandkids use them as an educational device. So be sure to go to our Birds Calls page. You can click on every program that we've ever aired in this show and listen to them, and also see all the photos that people have submitted. It's a great way to get your kids or grandkids interested in nature, conservation, and just the wonders of the world. This has been Bird Calls from Red River Radio, and this has been produced here and made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana. Cliff Shackelford is our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio, and we want to thank everybody at the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department for loaning us Cliff. He is the statewide ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. Bird Calls is produced in the studios of Red River Radio. Our sound file tonight for our profile species was from xenocanto.org, recorded by Paul Marvin, and this month's bird photo was produced and snapped by James Childress, who I'm very jealous of his photographic skills. Be sure to join us next Tuesday at 6 p.m. for What's Bugging You with Dr. Beverly Burden here on Red River Radio, and the next edition of Bird Calls will be on Tuesday, October 13th at 6 p.m. And this has been Red River Radio. Don't forget that we have Health Matters coming up this Thursday here on Red River Radio. Stay tuned. Radio Lab is coming up in just a few moments here on Red River Radio. And we are your community-supported public broadcasting service from LSUS. This is KDAQ Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA Alexandria Pineville, KBSA El Dorado, Camden Magnolia, KLDN Lufkin Nacogdoches, and KTYK Overton Tyler Kilgore.